Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, and Bob Beers on the home of the Bees, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Just over a week to go in the regular season, and the Bruins ever so briefly took over first place. Tampa leapfrogged back in front of them yesterday, but with six games to go in the regular season, first place is within reach in the Eastern Conference. As we get started here on this Saturday morning, we'll take you until 11 o'clock. Ryan Johnston here in the Town Fair Tire Studios over at TD Garden, where the Bruins will take on Florida today at 1 o'clock. We've got Judd Zerai and Bob Beers. Good morning there, guys.
Good morning.
Morning, Ryan.
Pretty exciting one the other night, huh? It had pretty much everything we could have hoped for as far as a potential playoff preview.
It did, and it's been the norm, actually, because they've been playing some of these teams. I know that you're not going to play some of the Western Conference teams, but that Central Division trip that we just had was some great hockey, really. I mean, some intense hockey. A lot of games came right down to the end. Everybody's fighting for a playoff spot, and then, of course, you know, culminates coming back here, playing against Tampa Bay for first place. And, it did have that playoff feel to it, no question about it. The intensity was there. The tight checking was there. The anger was up, so... we've been all looking forward to the playoffs ever since they clinched, but, can't get here quick enough for me. I want to see it.
Well, especially when you look at, the opportunity to potentially, and look, it would be down the road, obviously, but the opportunity to potentially play Tampa Bay in that second round and to see that, kind of playoff atmosphere plus a little bit of hatred between those two teams, and it started getting chippy early, and we'll get into the whole thing with Tuca and Pasternak dropping the gloves and all of that, but it you could see that there's a healthy dislike between these two teams, and the opportunity to maybe see that for a best of seven series really got me excited the other night.
That's what makes the playoffs so juicy, when hockey's played with that type of intensity, that type of anger, that type of animosity, that type of energy. That's what I think attracts everybody to the game, and when you can see it on display before the playoffs begin, like we saw the other night here at TD Garden against the Tampa Bay Lightning, it just leaves you wanting more. So we're only a short time away from getting an opportunity to see where the Bruins are going to open up in the first round and who they're going to open up against, because that still has to be sorted out here in the last handful of games.
How much do you guys think, and a lot was made about them taking over first place on Thursday night, and as I said, Tampa Bay wins last night, and so they're back in front, but how much do you think it matters whether they finish first or second?
To the players or to who?
I don't know. The team won't say, I'm sure, that it matters one way or the other, but how much do you think it matters to their ultimate success?
I don't look at it that way. I look at it as, the mentality that you have to have is just, you go out and you play each game that's in front of you. And wherever you end up, you kind of end up. And I know that's a little cliche, but it's kind of true. And, I don't know whether people want to believe that or not, or people want to say, they're trying to finish first because they play this team, or they want to finish second because they play this team. It's not the mentality that you go into each game with. It's not, how you approach it. I think you're getting at, who's a better matchup. I assume that's the direction you're going. But, and you kind of be careful what you wish for sometimes when the playoffs start. We've seen a number of teams that finish eighth that go on to a Stanley Cup final or even win it. And Nashville's a perfect example from last season.
A couple years ago, it happened for the LA Kings. They got in. They won the Stanley Cup coming out as the eighth seed.
Sure.
This is not the NBA. Upsets happen in the National Hockey League. And they really happen. Really happened in the first round. In fact, Patrice Bergeron was talking about it the other day, that sometimes the most difficult round is that first round. So every opponent you're going to face, every team that's going to be in the tournament to start, both in the East and the West, has a chance of winning that first round series.
I only go, and I know it's a long time ago, Ryan, but personal experience, and it doesn't always work out this way, but you look back at some of the, the games that the even from the Bruins, and I'll go personal experience. I mean, my first year in the playoffs, we go seven games against Hartford. I know people, some people out there don't know Hartford. Hartford had a team, yes, the Whalers. We go 7 games against Hartford. Then we go, I think it was 6 against Montreal in the second round. We go 4 against Washington in the third round. You know, sweep them, and that's the conference finals. So, I mean, you know, it's and every playoff year is different. There's no perfect prediction. There's no perfect way to predict it. I'm just saying that, you know, you're going to have a fight no matter who you play. And I don't think that there's a preference on their side for who they play. I don't think there's a preference on their side for, you know, where they finish. You know, you play each game the way it comes and where you end up. All right, here's our schedule. Let's go play. I mean, you know, on the outside, we can look at it and say, well, they might match up better against this team, or they might match up better against that team. And that's fine. That's for us to do. But, you know, they don't approach it that way.
So do you think that they match up better against New Jersey than they do against Toronto, if those would be the matchups?
I think Toronto's a very dangerous team when you look at their speed and their skill up front. They're a little vulnerable on the back end. You can find areas of weakness with every team. You can find areas of strength with every team. I think New Jersey gave the Bruins all they could handle this year. All 3 games could have gone either way. I mean, one game was, what, an 11-game shootout? That was what McAvoy won. New Jersey was in both those other games and gave the Bruins, you know, a hard time with their speed. Their speed and some of their skill up front. So I think either one is going to be tough. So, no, I don't have a preference. And who knows? It could be somebody else. I mean, there's still some things to be decided.
Sure.
Yeah, it could be the Florida Panthers. Florida's got 3 games left against the Bruins. That's going to determine, you know, kind of where they finish, if they make the playoffs or not.
And Florida, for example, since the start of February, they're 19-7-2. And they've been basically playing playoff hockey here for a couple of months. So they're ready to go.
We saw a playoff game the other night. I fully expect to see it again this afternoon from the Panthers.
Absolutely. You know, coming on the heels of going through Toronto and Ottawa and not picking 2 points up in either of those games. I think they come out of there with only 1 point, and that was the overtime loss against the Ottawa Senators. So urgency, desperation will certainly be on display for the Florida Panthers. And if they get in, they've been essentially geared up to play playoff hockey for a couple of months.
Well, guys, as we today hit the final day of this month of March, and there's still 6 games left between now and next Sunday in the regular season, but we pointed all season long to this month of March, and it carries on into that first week of April, obviously, as to how difficult this schedule was going to be, how jammed it was. There's a game every other day, if not some back-to-backs in there, and as part of that, you had a stretch where the Bruins go on the road for 8 games out of 9. They played 4 in a row on the road. They come back home for 1. They play 4 in a row on the road. And they have come through this month of March. They've dealt with injuries and significant injuries in Chara and McAvoy. And Bergeron was out for a good chunk of it. And, you know, and all of the rest. And here they sit, having had a tremendously successful month. Even if you took the injuries out of it, they've had a tremendously successful month. And now here they are, you know, going into the last week of the regular season with a chance to potentially win the division, win the East, and make even more of a statement. I'm blown away continually by this team, and have been throughout the course of this season, really since mid-November. But I never expected this month would be this successful, especially given some of the circumstances that they've dealt with.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up, actually, because I'm looking at the records, and I sort of looked at this the other day. So the Bruins have a chance to win 11 games in the month of March. That would surpass any previous month. If they win today, they would be 11-2-3 in the month of March. And I think what you're seeing and what we're all seeing is just the strength of the resolve and the character that exists with the complement of players that is on the ice every single night. They are not willing to pack it in. We just haven't seen those games this year. When's the last time that you remember the Bruins got blown out? Or the last time you can say, well, they didn't show up? That just hasn't happened this year. At least it, and if it has happened, it hasn't happened for several months.
Yeah, and it's I think the mentality of the teams that are in, the thing that, you know, most impressed me every night, you know, that workmanlike kind of attitude, and they go at it. I mean, that's, you know, they could have easily kind of, you know, packed it in on a couple of occasions during this month, especially with some of the guys they had out, and whether it's, you know, at the beginning of a game or whether it's after 2 periods and they're losing, 4-1 to Carolina. Well, they gave up a goal early in the third. You know, those games, you can easily just pack those games in. You see a lot of teams do that. And you know, they just they don't do it. They might not come out on top every time, but there's no real quit in them, and that's you know, that's a testament to the leadership that they have and the guys who have been there, but also the character that they have in that room right now. And you know, whether that carries over into the playoffs, I mean, I expect it to. I mean, whether success carries over into the playoffs is still to be determined, and it's not going to be an easy road. But there's a couple things that I look at right now with this last week or so. Okay, so it looks like DeBrusque is going to play here today. That's a great sign. You know, Chara and McAvoy skating and getting closer and closer. It looks like Chara won't play today, but will play probably tomorrow, possibly tomorrow. So they're not going to play him in the back-to-back games. Makes sense, right? I mean, get him back, knock some of that rust off, but not quite yet. McAvoy's knocking on the door right now as well. You're going to see him on this road trip at some point if everything goes well. The only question right now is Rick Nash, and then so how do you balance this last week where you'd still like to get a couple of guys, maybe some, I don't know about a day off or a game off, but at least a lot less ice time, guys like you know, and there's a lot of people talking about this right now, or several people, is, you know, Marchand and Pastrnak and those guys, especially Marchand, you know, some of the, he's put this team on his back some nights in the way that he's approached it, in the way that he's played, and what he's accomplished this season. It's been outstanding, especially when Bergeron went down injured. He's not alone. There's a number of guys you can point to. But, you know, maybe just a little bit of extra rest for some of the guys coming down the stretch, and you still have a busy week. This starts today, 6 games in 9 days to finish it off. So all that busy month of March, we still have 6 games in 9 days to finish this thing off. So important to get the injured guys back and knock off some of the rust, and maybe a little bit of extra rest for some of the guys who have been really pulling a big load here recently.
617-779-0985, the number for your calls throughout the show today. Obviously, we'll talk with Joe Haggerty coming up later this hour. Billy Jaffe will join us in the final half hour of the show today as well. It is the Sports Hub Hockey Show on a Saturday morning.
This is where Boston talks hockey. 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 The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Ryan Johnston here in the Town Fair Tire Studios on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Judd Surratt, Bob Beers joining me from over at TD Garden this morning. 1 o'clock faceoff for the Bruins and the Florida Panthers today. Guys, as we open the show talking about the intensity of that game against Tampa Bay the other night, the Bruins beat the Lightning again, and once again, as we have seen a number of times this year, the Bruins were able to kind of shut down some of the big names on that team. And that's a really good offensive team, as we know. What has been the key against Tampa this year? Why have the Bruins been able to have the kind of success they've had against Stamkos and company?
Well, there's no, I mean, it's something that they try to do against a lot of teams, right? And that's just take away time and space and make sure that you're not giving them opportunities to make plays. They can really excel on the power play, which you saw that pass from Kucherov and how good that was from the right wing side in front of the net there on the goal that was scored, on one of the goals that was scored. But they have, I think that when you, the fear factor of, you know, when you're playing against a team like that, to know that, hey, we need to be on our game defensively if we're going to be good here today, if we're going to have a chance to win. So, you know, that when I say fear factor, the fear of getting blown out, the fear of getting embarrassed, you know, when they've got the ability to do that, they've got a couple of lines that can really score. And, you know, just because the Bruins have been able to kind of bottle them up for the most part in these games, you know, doesn't mean that continues. You still have to play a certain way, and it's taking away the time and space. When a defenseman has the back pressure from the forwards coming back up the ice, it allows them to be more aggressive in their in kind of taking away some of that time and space and really attacking the puck carrier. That they know that they've got that support coming back, but if that gap is big between the forwards and the D, now you've got to back off and you're not so sure. Maybe it's an odd man rush, and you know, it wasn't foolproof the other night. You know, I mean Rask made some big saves. I mean, JT Miller had a couple real good opportunities in that game. You know, there were some other chances that were generated by the Lightning. It wasn't a perfect game. It was intense, and I think people, you know, and it was a good game. Don't get me wrong. The Bruins played a good game, but there were some times in that game, which you expect when there's some momentum swings, and it was a fight for ice the other night where battles had to be won. You had to do certain things in order to generate some scoring chances, and, the Lightning came in ready to play. The Lightning were ready to play that game. That had a much different feel than the game down in Tampa. because, you know, that game down in Tampa I didn't think was ever really in jeopardy. This one here I think could have gone either way for a while in that game before the Bruins kind of, you know, built a two-goal lead in the third. But that's the type of pushback you expected from the Lightning earlier in the season. Now you got it here last night, and I expect even more the next game that they play down in Tampa this week.
To build on Bob's point, I think just thinking back to what Patrice Bergeron said during the first intermission, the Bruins have done a good job of collapsing in the middle, especially here in the last two meetings against the Tampa Bay Lightning.
You brought that up the other night, too, but you can collapse to the middle, but it's not all about the collapsing. You still want to attack that puck carrier up wide, and I think that's the biggest difference from maybe when Claude Julien first started here. Everybody collapsed to the middle. You know, they gave up all the outside. Now they attack, but they talk about layers, and it's true, because you've got a man attacking the puck carrier, but then if that fails and there's a pass made or a man is beaten, there's another layer there, and that's packing the middle. That's protecting the middle of the ice and not giving up those grade A scoring chances in those areas.
They've done a terrific job 200 feet, and that's not the game that Tampa wants to play. Bob talked about gaps. Tampa wants to play a rush game. They want to be able to be flying through the neutral zone. They are feasting on your turnovers. The Bruins, for the most part, have done a pretty good job of managing the puck.
They didn't have a lot of room in the neutral zone the other day at all.
Right? How many odd man chances did they generate in that game? Even though Rask had to make some saves, and they're making it hard to come out of their own zone. So those are all the things that takes Tampa away from the things that they want to be able to do.
There's not one area you can put your finger on either. It's okay, so... How do you play better in the neutral zone? Well, maybe you forecheck better, so you make it harder for them to get out of their end. How do you go on the attack? How are your breakouts looking? Do you get back? Do you make that first or second pass? Do you win a battle along the wall with a pinching defenseman in order to get that puck into the neutral zone and get it moving forward? You know, all those things kind of trigger other things that go on in the game. So you can try to shut them down by doing X, but the rest of your game has to come along as well. It can't just be, all right, we're just going to take away time and space. It has to be, you know, our forecheck has to be on. We have to be, you know, F1's got to get there first, and F2's got to be in good position, and we got to force a turnover down there, and we got to be aggressive on that, you know, aggressive on our pinches and make sure the defensemen are way up and not sitting back in the neutral. And then, you know, line changes. There's so many things that go along with it, you know, whether it's matchups and making sure you get the right people on the ice at the right times. And it is really... I mean, there's so much kind of put into it now with video and structure and things like that, and then you let the skill guys kind of take over when they get the opportunity to do so, and that's been the formula for the Bruins for a lot of the season.
I read Steven Stamkos' comments, by the way, and he felt that Tampa Bay was in control of the game. I might disagree with him there.
I heard John Cooper say similar things at times in that game, that they felt that they were in control of it, and I don't know if control is the right word, but there were some momentum swings there. They didn't give the Bruins much of the partway through the second period. The Bruins were struggling to generate chances. So, you know, they're trying to spin positive, put positive spin on it, I know. But they are right in a couple of ways there.
I think the only time where the game started to sway was in the second period, yeah. And that's when the Bruins found themselves in the box, especially early on. I thought the first period, the Bruins had the upper hand. They had a 2-0 lead. They get a couple of goals there in the final minute, take that lead into the intermission. Then you get an early penalty, and then the Bruins take a minor after that. And then at that point, that's where Tampa Bay really generates its energy, is on the man advantage. Whether they score or not, it's generating those plays. That's what gets those skill players excited. As much as possible, if you can stay out of the box, and obviously it was a very feisty game, but if you're able to do that, you're able to take away a massive weapon and a big energizer for the Lightning.
617-779-0985 is the number here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Maria in Watertown is up first. Hey, Maria.
Hi, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Quickly, I'm going to ask a rhetorical question just because of the hit on Matt Grizzlick during the Winnipeg game. And I'd like to know, you know, what Department of Player Safety is waiting for in order to address these hits consistently? Are we waiting for someone to have a serious injury, such as was suffered by Steve Moore when Todd Bertuzzi hit him a few years ago? As you might recall, that ended up actually being, lawsuits and suspensions. And I just don't understand it. And I'm getting very, very frustrated and very concerned about the inconsistencies and the officiating that night. Absolutely atrocious. Those four gentlemen should not be allowed on the ice together again to officiate a game this season. And then my next question has to do with the Bruins game the other night, and I think in conjunction with the hit on Grizzlick is the Bruins, I think, are making a statement to other teams and to the league that they are done with how things are being handled, that they're going to defend their players from this point forward. And I frankly don't blame them. I don't blame Cam Neely for his comments with regard to how things are being handled. And then my question or any concerns I have going into the playoffs is the only thing that makes me nervous is the Bruins still seem to be getting consistently behind the game and playing catch up, and the occasional soft goal from Tuukka. Those are the two things that I think I'd like to see them button up before the playoffs start. Thanks for the time, guys. Have a great day.
Appreciate it, Maria. We'll put the player safety thing on hold for a moment because we don't have enough time to get into that. And I want to talk a little bit about Cam Neely's thoughts on that this week. But from the standpoint of Tuukka Rask, getting into a physical altercation during the course of that game, David Pastrnak dropping the gloves in that game. Again, a lot of that comes with maybe the amped up intensity of a playoff type atmosphere. But is there something to be said for, you know, the Bees just standing up and saying enough's enough, or, you know, Pastrnak coming to the aid of Patrice Bergeron after Patrice takes a big hit and says, you know what, enough's enough. We're not gonna let you do that with a week to go in the season.
I mean, that was a good hit, though, by Girardi.
Oh, sure.
I mean, it's much, much different than, you know, something else that goes on. I mean, I commend Pastrnak for, you know, maybe he didn't see it cleanly, or maybe he just, you know, wanted to, you know, make his presence felt this year. I don't think it's something that the Bruins want to see all the time from David Pastrnak. I certainly hope to. And I didn't know he was a lefty. We found that out. He threw a couple of lefts there. I know he didn't connect, but he did throw a couple of lefts. So.
He may not have known.
Yeah. Yeah, he may not. You're right. But... You know, I don't know if there's anything to that. I just think that, you know, you preach team toughness all the time. We've seen guys stand up for one another, you know, throughout the season on different occasions, you know, based on the situation. And, you know, I don't know. I just love the intensity, and I love the mentality that they bring right now. I know we're not going to get into the player safety stuff, but they have that mentality, and I think it's from top to bottom. And I think when you see David Pastrnak or Tuukka Rask, you know, getting fired up in the heat of the moment and throwing some punches, that shows you where their team's attitude is right now.
And that was just the only difference. I think you've seen that identity from the Boston Bruins from the start of the season to the end, and certainly for many, many years here. It's just that you had some different players getting involved in some of those altercations with David Pastrnak and Tuukka Rask. But I want to go back to the Jets game, because to me, one of the most impressive things coming out of that Jets performance, and this is what the Bruins and every team will see in the playoffs, there will be calls, bounces, breaks that do not go your way. How do you respond, and what does that look like? The Bruins in that game had a call, a goal that should not have gone on the board. Mm. The procedure was not right. The call by the officials was not right, and I think the National Hockey League will acknowledge that fact. That said, what did the Bruins do? They responded. Ryan Donato tied the game at one. Second period. Now you're down again. Things are not necessarily going your way. What do the Bruins do? They respond again. That's what you're going to see in the playoffs. You have to be able to shake that off, whether it's a bad goal, a bad call, a bad bounce, something that you don't like, to be able to put that in the past and continue to follow what you need to do in order to win games.
All right, we got Judd and Bob over at the Garden. We'll be joined by Joe Haggerty coming up next. Sports Hub Headlines with Joe Murray as we continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5 the Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Brian Johnston here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Bruins and Panthers today at 1 o'clock, so the rest of the guys are over at the Garden today, Judd Surratt and Bob Beers. Is Joe Haggerty in the building as well?
Oh, I'm here.
All right.
Can you hear me, Ryan?
I can hear you.
What's happening? Good morning.
Morning. All right, so we opened the show today obviously talking about the intensity and the fun of that Tampa Bay Lightning game the other night, and, you know, from a larger perspective, the Bruins' success over the course of this month, and they've done so much of this without McAvoy and Chara and Bergeron, and now, you know, they're getting healthier and healthier and healthier. And now, as Bob mentioned, it looks like DeBrusque may play today, and, yep, you know, maybe Chara gets into the game tomorrow, and McAvoy looks like he's on track to be back this week. And it feels like everybody has mostly stayed on schedule as far as, you know, how long they were going to be out and getting back and getting a little bit of game time before the playoffs, but not Rick Nash. We don't seem to know what's going on with Rick Nash.
Well, what we do know is that he was at the facility the other day working out, which I took to be a good sign that he was present and getting in some activity. And, you know, I think we're all running under the assumption that this may be a concussion with him, given some of the intrigue and the mystery and the lack of information that's going on, and, you know, the hit he took against Tampa and kind of the way he looked like he might be able to play, and then he wasn't able to play kind of at the last minute in that game against Columbus. So, you know, I do – obviously it's tough to gauge timetables with them. Some concussions or head injuries, if that's what it is, can keep you out longer than others. So there's a lot of unknown, it seems like, with what his injury is and his return. But – if he's getting back to activity, if he's, you know, going into the practice facility, if he's starting sort of that path, I think that's a good sign. And, you know, from what I've been indicated and my information is that, you know, there's optimism that they're still going to have their whole lineup to either start the playoffs or, you know, very early in the playoffs. And I think that's what you've got to go on at this point. I don't think by any means it's kind of a doom and gloom, you know, Rick Nash has played his last game for the Bruins kind of situation. I don't sense that one at all. That is not the feeling that I get. And, you know, if he shows up in game one and he missed all these games the last few weeks to get himself right, I don't think anybody's going to have a problem with that.
All right, so with everybody healthy, and we went through the you know, the whole scenarios last week about, you know, what the lineups would look like and all of that. But with everybody healthy, how do you think they approach this last week of the season? 6 games in 9 days. Do we start to see them try to get some rest for some of these guys, as Bob was alluding to earlier? How do you think they approach these last 6 games?
Yeah, and obviously some guys have had rest by virtue of being injured, and you know, those guys are going to have to get in and get some playing time and get up to speed. But I do think some other players, obviously, if you can clinch what you have the ability to clinch and really take care of business over the next few games, you may be able to, you know, those last few games leading up to the end of the season, set yourself up for the postseason. Obviously, that would be ideal. But either way, they're in such a good spot right now. You know, obviously, I think you might match up or feel better about a matchup against Florida or New Jersey over Toronto just by virtue of the trouble that Toronto has given you over the last year or two. I've never sensed with the Bruins that they're really that concerned about it. I think they're concerned about making sure that they're ready, setting themselves up for the postseason, going out and trying to be competitive, but doing the right things to get to that point. And I've never felt like they've tried to play players that they might not, you know, forcing them back too early or bringing them back too early, potentially running Tuukka Rask into the ground to get better positioning or seating. I don't think they're doing any of that stuff. I think the eye has been on the prize of setting themselves up for the playoffs for a long time. They haven't deviated from that, and give them credit for it. You know, Judd and I were talking over the break that if they do a good job here in the next few games and they go to Florida right now and do really well, you know, the last couple games could be a little less meaningful for them, and they really could set themselves up for the playoffs.
I think for the most part, and the guys have talked about it pretty regularly, you want to be as healthy as possible. You want to make sure your game is as sharp as possible. Some of that is a little bit of a balance. But, yes, as Joe talked about, I mean, if the Bruins are able to win today and then, what is it, here in a couple of days after you play Philadelphia and Tampa Bay, go down and win in Florida again, mathematically the Panthers could be out at that point. That would make some of your decisions a little different for the final couple games.
Well, that would be the hope, right? You know, you could go into next weekend and say, okay, well, let's give Marchi or Pastrnak or whoever, you know, and you know, rather than having to go in there and try to win back-to-back games or maybe even play them 1 out of 2 or whatever, give them a few extra days rest.
Zdeno, for getting back to for one second, right? I heard you guys when I was driving in on the first part of the show. As far as the playoff matchups go, and if you'd like, you'd rather play one team or the other. Obviously, everybody's going to be tough. But all things being equal, I would think you'd want to avoid Toronto if you could. I mean, I think they're confident enough. They probably think they can beat anybody, and rightfully so. I think they've been the best team in the NHL for the last 4 months. But I just think there's more danger and depth as far as the dangerous skill fast players that could hurt you as far as the Leafs go. You know, obviously Taylor Hall is there, and they've got some good young players in Jersey, and those have been good games. But if you're going to play a team in the first round, I think I'd rather take my chances with teams I've beaten and maybe don't have the depth of dangerous weapons like Toronto does in Florida or New Jersey. The Bruins know firsthand about the dangers of the first round, right? I mean, both years they went to the Stanley Cup Final, arguably the toughest series, or you know, the toughest series certainly in the Eastern Conference bracket was the first round, whether it was Montreal in 2011, whether it was Toronto, where they had to make a historic comeback in Game 7 in 2013. So I think they're well aware, at least the older, more experienced players are, that no matter who they play in the first round, it's going to be tough. But, you know, if you could pick your poison, I think you'd pick Florida or New Jersey over Toronto.
Well, there's certainly a balancing act there in, you know, in how you want to approach it. But at the same time, you know, look, this isn't like you're gonna approach these like exhibition games where you're gonna sit half the roster and you know and play with you know call up half of the Providence Bruins to play that you know play a game. You're gonna be sitting a couple of guys here and there, and this team has shown certainly over the last month they don't necessarily need to have everybody in the lineup to be able to beat good teams.
Absolutely not, and. I was banging the drum for a long time about how difficult March was going to be. 16 games in 31 days, a lot of travel. You wondered if they were really going to hit a wall at that point. I thought they might, but you know they've.
It is a tough month. Don't think that just because they've gotten through it that they're okay. I mean,
right.
there
could be residual effects.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's why the rest for some certain guys is going to be important. Yeah, they've gotten rest for guys who have been injured. I realize that, but the guys that. Who have carried a huge load. And,
like Marchand.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, totally.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, the guys are over at the Garden. We will continue with Joe Haggerty coming up next on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Stay with us.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
98.5, the Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston here in the Town Fair Tire Studios over at TD Garden. Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, and we are joined as well by Joe Haggerty, Bruins insider for NBC Sports Boston. Hags, the Bruins signed Zdeno Chara to a one-year contract extension this week. $5 million base plus an additional $1.75 million in incentives and I guess from what I saw, some of those incentives or one of those incentives is pretty easy to reach, and hopefully all of those incentives are reachable. But, I mean, this is a clear case of, look, you don't want to go long term with a guy of his age, but clearly he's earned another go round with this team the way he's played this year.
Yeah, and the incentives are based on, you know, health and games played and team performance, which if all things go well, he's gonna reach them. So, yeah, I think it was a no-brainer deal for the Bruins and for Zdeno to keep things going. I think the number was appropriate given that he's still a number one defenseman on this team, 23 minutes a night, still the league's best penalty killer, you know, still extremely effective in the defensive zone, very underrated as far as moving the puck when everybody thinks of him as a defensive defenseman. He's embraced sort of being the shutdown guy and you know, not being on the power play as much. And he's a great mentor to all of these young defensemen that the Bruins have coming through. So I think on a number of different levels, it made all the sense in the world, as long as he's still playing at the level that he is, to get it done, take care of it before the playoffs. I think the cap hit is appropriate. And, you know, I've likened it a few times to the Tim Wakefield towards the end of his career with the Red Sox, where they just would sign him to one-year deals in perpetuity for around the same amount of money every year. And at some point, they just said, this is what we're going to do going forward for as long as Wakefield wants to pitch. And I think that's kind of what you'll see with Chara, is he'll continue to sign these one-year deals with the Bruins as long as he wants to play. And if he wants to play to 45 years old and he can still play 20 minutes a night, and, you know, as he goes on, maybe even settle into more of a 3-4 with reduced minutes rather than being a number one, then you keep going for as long as it'll last, because you know, he's a great leader and a great player, and it was good news that they got it done ahead of the postseason.
Do you get any sense, and this is more of a longer-term question, obviously, with him, but with him being 41 years old, do you have a sense of what ultimately the plan is for the Bruins about, you know, replacing him when it comes time? Do they feel like it's going to come from inside the organization, or are they going to have to target somebody on the outside here over the next year or two?
Yeah, I don't know that they've got anybody in the organization that's going to be able to step in and give you a facsimile of what Chara can do and the kind of player that he's been. Obviously, it's still very early on with, you know, guys like Zboril or Lauzon or Vakanainen and all these young players, left side players that they have that could potentially step in and be a top four, maybe even someday be a top pairing left side defenseman. But I would think, if and when Chara does decide to move on, I don't know that it's going to be short term. I think he's got his eye on playing at least a few more years. But you do have to start to think about it. But it may be one of those guys develops. Maybe they draft somebody else in the meantime if it's a couple of years. But I don't know that there's anybody in there right now that they think could readily step in. And they would, if something happened, have to go out and get somebody. Now, who would that be? It's a good question, and I don't know who that would be because I don't think they're thinking that ahead, that they're enjoying the Chara era that's still going on here with the Bruins.
If you're Don Sweeney, by the way, I think one of the things that you really like about that contract is it gives you a little bit of cost certainty because a couple of years down the road, you're going to have to pay, or you're assuming they're still with the organization, Charlie McAvoy, Brandon Carlo, Danton Heinen, Ryan Donato, all RFAs, all restricted free agents. What are those numbers going to look like? And certainly the biggest number is going to be for a guy like Charlie McAvoy. Mm-hmm. What is my salary cap situation look like? You talk about what is the ad long term? What is the replacement for Zdeno Chara down the stretch? What is that going to cost me? So when you just look at your spreadsheet as far as what my salary structure looks like, that's what you have to have your eye on as well.
And if you're looking outside, obviously it's going to cost you quite a bit. And, you know, that's a big number you're going to have to plug in there. And that ramps up the difficulty of getting somebody to fill in if it's not internal. And, I mean, that's the biggest thing on the long term that Judd's referencing with this Bruins team is it's great that you have prospects. It's fantastic. It breathes a lot of life into this organization. I think it's a big part of what's going on this season and why people are so optimistic going into the playoffs. But you're right. Within a couple of years, there are a lot of young players you're going to have to sign to those second contracts, some bigger than others, and you're going to have to start shelling out the bucks for them while still having guys like Marchand, Bergeron, and others on the books.
And go back, how good does the David Pastrnak contract look right now, based on what you were going through during training camp, trying to get him under contract at a number that made sense? You're talking about a guy who's having a career year offensively overall in points, may match or surpass that number in goals, but you've got him for a very reasonable number based on his production and his age.
And same with Marchand, too. That was a very good contract as well, given the performance that you're getting out of him. And given what he could have gotten if he went to market, he probably could have gotten more. So Don Sweeney did a great job with both those contract extensions.
All right, before we let you go, Hags, Maria brought it up, and I'm going to get these guys.
I missed Maria. What did she say? Right?
Well, no, I'm going to get these guys' opinion on it afterwards because we put it off. But the Morrissey hit on Grizzlick this week. Cam Neely has come out and expressed some frustration this week about the Department of Player Safety and some of the decisions or lack thereof that they have made or haven't made recently. What was your take on how the league looked at that hit on Grizzlick the other night and why there wasn't supplementary discipline handed out?
They looked strictly at the action right before collision, and the fact that they felt Grizzlick turns last second or last millisecond, a 0.3 seconds to go towards the boards, and that Morrissey couldn't pull up on the hit, and you know there was some responsibility on Grizzlick's part as far as not doing that and not putting himself in that vulnerable position. And, you know, by the letter of the law in the league, I think they're right in that respect. But I think there's also going to be a lot more consideration for the situation, which is there's no play to be made when there's like a second left to go on the clock in the period. Morrissey coming bombing in from all the way from the blue line as a defenseman, seeing Scheifele get hit in the corner and clearly wanting retribution by, you know, whacking Grizzlick at the end of the period as Grizzlick is basically standing up against the boards trying to shield the puck and let the clock run out. So, you know, I felt like there should have been a lot more consideration for the situation and the unnecessariness of the hit and the fact that he was trying to hurt a guy there. But they didn't really, I think, take that into account at all. It was more about Grizzlick turned last minute, and, you know, this is something we're trying to tell players not to do, so, you know, there's going to be no supplemental discipline. And as far as Cam goes, I can understand his frustration. I think there's been, organizationally, some frustration based on why does David Backes get 3 games for something we don't feel like he should have gotten 3 games for, and then our guys are getting hit and nothing is happening. And I think the Bruins feel like there's an inconsistency there and there's a frustration at that. And it's understandable. I do think the Backes suspension was, you know, not warranted for 3 games given his track record, given the hit. And some of these other hits could have been. Certainly, I think that Morrissey hit could have been, and it wasn't. And I think there is definitely frustration through the front office, through ownership, at what's been going on.
All right, Hags, we'll let you go on that. Appreciate the time, as always.
All right, thanks, boys.
Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston. All right, I want to get Judd and Bob's thoughts on that and just kind of this. This is like 3 or 4 weeks in a row we've had, you know, a decision or, as I said, lack thereof by the Department of Player Safety that has directly involved the Bruins. Either getting suspended or an opposing player not getting suspended. So I want to kind of look at that from a larger perspective here and the consistency factor of those decisions. We'll do that after the Sports Hub headlines. We can get to more of your calls coming up here over the next half hour at 617-779-0985 on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Number 2 of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. 617-779-0985. The number, Ryan Johnston here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Judd Surratt, Bob Beers joining me from over at TD Garden. We're face-off just about 3 hours away for the Bruins and the Florida Panthers. Whatever you want to touch on Bruins-related, obviously, as they move into the final week plus of the regular season, which was supposed to end a week from today, now ends a week from tomorrow with that extra makeup game against the Florida Panthers. And as we talked about earlier, that may or may not have anything on the line for both of those teams by the time this next Sunday rolls around. But as we just finished the last hour with Joe Haggerty, guys, in talking about Cam Neely coming out and expressing his frustration with the league this week and the Department of Player Safety and their handling of some of these incidents that have come up, whether it be the David Backes suspension or some of the hits against the Bruins. You know, we talked at length at the time about the Hornquist-McAvoy hit and McAvoy kind of leaning forward and the difference in that. And you know, last week it was Braden Schenn and David Krejci, and now this week it's Morrissey and Grizzlick. And this one had a different feel to it in that, you know, I know the league makes the case that Grizzlick turns and late and he puts himself in a vulnerable position. And that's one thing. But I also look at that hit and say, boy, it looked to me like Morrissey, you know, went full bore, left his feet the whole thing, and you can say that Grizzlick turned, but that's still, even if he hits him from the side, the leaping hit is not the way that you're supposed to approach that play.
Yeah, there are a lot of factors in that. I mean, the situation of the game as well. You know, Marchand had just thrown a big hit on Scheifele down in the corner. You know, the period is coming to an end. He's leaving the left defense position there to come up and make that hit in the far corner. You know, they always say, you know, could the hit have been avoided? Well, I think that one could have been avoided with a second left on the clock. I mean, it certainly seemed like it was in response to the hit by Marchand and maybe some of the other things that had gone on in that game, some of the other big hits that were thrown in the game. Those circumstances alone tells you, you know, that there's intent. They don't want to judge by intent. You know, they want to judge just by the action itself, and or at least that's what I've seen anyhow and heard, but or some of what I heard. But I think when you see that hit, that I do think that there's a reasonable explanation is not the right word, but he did turn. he turned at the last second. And in that sense, he put himself in a little bit of a vulnerable position. But for Morrissey to come from where he did to make that hit right after another hit and being a second left on the clock and then leaving his feet like he did, all that should have been taken into consideration as well. And I'm sure it was. But they deemed it that that the fact that he turned at the last second was enough to say no, and you know I felt that there was something there. I do think that this though that the referees, I know that they came under a lot of criticism in that game and a lot of it rightfully so. They gave him a 5-minute major on the ice, which was the right call, and the Bruins got a power play out of that. They end up scoring goals. If they suspend Morrissey, it really doesn't matter to the Bruins.
Sure,
I just think that they'd like to see that justice, but it doesn't help them at all. It only affects the teams that are battling with Winnipeg, because, they lose another defenseman then. And they're already down a few. But it doesn't help the Bruins at all. They got the 5-minute major. In the area that it helped the Bruins, they got the 5-minute major, and they ended up scoring a few times and end up coming back and getting a point out of that game. So, in that sense, I felt that they got it right. But, yeah, I thought that the league should have looked at it a little differently than they did. But, I felt they should have looked at the Backus hit a lot differently than they did as well. And some of the other ones, I kind of understand. I certainly get the Hornquist hit. The Krejci and Schenn one was, that was some gray area there that you might have been able to go either way with that hit. But certainly, they've come under some hits here over the last few weeks, couple months, whatever you want to call it, that has gone, it seems like it's gone against them, and they're just in that wrong side of it right now.
and Ryan, I think what you have to remember around the National Hockey League, we could be tuning into a hockey show in any of the other 30 markets, and this will be part of the discussion, is the inconsistency or the perceived inconsistency that comes out of NHL player safety.
Hey, Winnipeg thought that that there was an offsides that the Bruins end up scoring on. John Cooper and Tampa Bay Lightning thought that there was a non-goalie interference. It was called goalie interference the other day. Toronto's had several occasions like that. There's been offsides. It goes on throughout the league.
Sure.
But the player safety and some of the big hits that the Bruins have been on the wrong end of in terms of the way that they've been dealt with is, kind of gets magnified here.
Well, I get there. It's an inexact science just by its nature, but it just feels like, and as you said, the Bruins have kind of had an inordinate number of these things come up in their games, it seems like, of late. But I think ultimately the players, the coaches, the organizations, they're looking for consistency, right?
Hey, they just
want to know.
Right, Ryan?
What?
They got the Backus hit on Trocheck, right?
Right.
After the referees gave him a match penalty.
Right. I mean, but
so someone got it wrong.
But even that is like, look, if, officials on the ice are going to make mistakes. If they get something like that wrong in the heat of the game, that's going to happen ultimately because you're seeing things at full speed, one shot at it, and you make the call. It's when you go back after the fact and you're looking at video, and we can all go back and look at video, and there's a lack of consistency in the decisions then, that's when I think the frustration becomes palpable because now it's, you had an opportunity to look at this for a full day and you still don't seem to make the same decision on this hit as you do on this hit. And I think ultimately as fans and as coaches and players and everything else, we just want to know, okay, if a guy does this, is it going to be 2 games, 3 games, 5 games, whatever, or is it going to be nothing? And when you see a hit like Morrissey's, you say, well, that seems like something that should at least be something. Right, whether it benefits the Bruins or not in the long term, it should still be punishable by the league.
I would agree with you, Ryan. I think when I saw the hit and saw the replay, I thought it rose to the level of supplemental discipline. I can understand where the National Hockey League is trying to make an argument opposite of that. Bruce Cassidy had mentioned the other day at practice he felt like the officials got the call on the ice right. He didn't necessarily address whether or not there should have been supplemental discipline. But look also in the bigger picture how many changes there have been to the guys who are running that department. Now, you still have some people who have been there for a while, but the head of the department has changed. It was Brendan Shanahan for a while. It was Stefan Quintal, who's now getting phased out. George Parros has now stepped in. Before Brendan Shanahan, it was Colin Campbell. So you've had a fair amount of changeover here over the last 10 years, and maybe because of that, we see some different rulings around the National Hockey League.
Let's go to some calls here. 617-779-0985. William in Plymouth, you're up on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, gentlemen, good morning.
What's up?
Enjoying your show.
Thanks.
You know, I really thought, as far as those hits are concerned, that that hit by Morrissey on Grizzlick, I thought was the NHL's explanation, I think, is definitely arguably weak. But I also didn't like the hit by Shen on Krejci. And there was a great GIF out there, I think that's how you pronounce it, a very slow-motion clip of that. And it very clearly shows the point of contact is Krejci's head with Shen's elbow. So that to me, it should have been also, you know, there should have been supplementary justice or punishment. But, you know, the thing that I look at it as a Bruins fan, I say to myself, what if Brad Marchand had done either of those hits? Do you guys think he would have been, you know, would there have been supplementary discipline?
Yeah, I mean, that's been a kind of a big topic of conversation in this as well.
Hold on, Ryan.
Yeah,
I do want to, you know, go back early in the season. Marshy, after getting knotted up with John Tavares in the neutral zone or right around the blue line, took a run at him in the far corner here at TD Garden. And when it first happened live, my first thought was, uh-oh, he could receive some supplemental discipline. He did not in that instance. So I think you do have to have that in mind. However, I do think that later in the season, that in some way that may have factored in to a suspension he got.
Right, like they kind of...
they said it didn't, but...
Right, but in their minds, they're thinking,
let
you slide before. The next time, you're going to take it, right?
Well, it still doesn't change the fact that he doesn't get many calls either when he has the puck on his stick for half the game. And
you mean getting mugged in overtime by the Columbus Blue Jackets?
Yeah, I mean, and that kind of enters into the frustration for the fans here as well, is that, you know, you guys, Judd, you mentioned the prime example of that is, you know, him getting... not getting that opportunity in overtime and not even getting a penalty call. It's like, we're not asking for supplementary discipline here. We're asking for, you know, for him to get a call that not only should a superstar get that call, but pretty much anybody should get that call.
Anybody.
Right.
Anybody. And that should have been, that should have been a penalty shot, let alone a penalty, easily. And it should have been called. There's no question about it. And that's just one example. That's the most glaring example. But there's a lot of examples throughout games, I think, when, for Marchand, you know, for him, it's about, okay, how much do I ride the refs, you know, at certain situations throughout a game in order to get calls a little bit later, maybe? Or, you know, you kind of have to massage their egos a little bit sometimes, or you have to manage them a little bit. And you know, they try to do the same thing. I mean, that's part of the gamesmanship that goes on down there at ice level. But he's a guy that has a puck on his stick whenever he's out on the ice, I mean, a lot. And there's a lot of times when you look down and you're waiting for a penalty to be called because of some of the other penalties that are called in a game or other penalties that are called in a season. When you see a one-handed slash, you know, behind a net, or you see, you know, a little tug here or a little tug there, and they're called, and then all of a sudden he's got the puck and he's getting mugged and he's not getting calls. I think that's a real truth this season from what we've seen.
All right, we will continue with the guys over at the Garden and more of your calls coming up. 617-779-0985 here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
617-779-0985. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Billy Jaffe will join us coming up in about 15 minutes. We got Judd Surratt and Bob Beers over at TD Garden. Bruins and Panthers today at 1 o'clock. 12:30 pregame show here on the Hub, of course. Let's get back to more of your calls. John, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Good morning. Since it's Easter Sunday for me, I'm going to keep this all good. I know he's not going to get it, Butch Cassidy's not going to get Coach of the Year. Hopefully he gets rewarded with a cup. But one person that should be recognized is Don Sweeney for his wonderful job that he's done. I don't know if they still do, like, Executive of the Year. And also, I'd like to add a slogan to this team. I think from now on, they should be called Butch Cassidy and the Cardiac Kids.
Thank you. John? Don Sweeney, I mean, we have we've talked a lot, and a lot of people make a lot about what Bruce Cassidy has done with this team, and the job that he has done has been phenomenal since he took over for Claude Julien, and the record speaks for itself. Donnie Sweeney, kind of below the radar, has made some moves with this team, and and even more importantly, maybe has been willing to trust in some of these young guys going into this season, and it has come out smelling like a rose at the end of it all here as we approach the final week of the season.
He's done a terrific job this year. That's drafting, that's development, that's signing contracts, that's being patient. Sometimes that can be the hardest thing. And there are some very accomplished general managers around the National Hockey League that at times during their careers have not necessarily been patient, and it's cost them. But I think this year, and remember, this is a Bruins team that started 6-7-4. They've lost only 10 games in regulation since the middle of November, which is incredible. But I think it's his ability to manage the roster that he has here, to be able to scout and develop, and the way that things have been managed throughout the organization, signing free agents like Ryan Donato, making sure that they do get here, that they don't exercise a loophole, and signing contracts that make sense with an eye toward the future. He's done a marvelous job this year.
Yeah, there's so much to it, and it's not just this year. It's actually since he's taken over. He preached that patience when he took over. And, you know, did he hit on every draft? No, he didn't. Actually, the jury's still out. We shouldn't say that. The jury is still out on some of the picks that were made. You know, when they have the three first-rounders there in a row. And we've seen other players who were in that draft that got drafted after some of the Bruins players step in and make a huge impact for their teams. But at the same time, it's not only it's the draft and development, yes, but it's also the the culture around the team and what you're trying to create. You know, he had to go through a coaching change with Claude Julien leaving and Bruce Cassidy coming in, and Cassidy's done an outstanding job. And there's no question about it. You wanted to make sure that it wasn't just a taste last year at the end of the season when they had that big boost and they played well and they got into the playoffs and, you know, you're an undermanned team and you got knocked out in the first round. Then you identified other things that coming into this season where you wanted to add to the depth of your lineup, whether it be at the beginning of the season or at the trade deadline. You had the faith in the core players to be able to do the job. You had the faith in the system where, you know, Jake DeBrusk having a good year down in Providence last season, but does not get a call-up. They want to leave him down there and let him just play. Don't be a yo-yo coming up and down. You know, leave him alone, play down there, learn what it's like to be a pro, and then next year you're going to get every opportunity to make this team. And I think that's the case with some of the players they have down there right now. And that's the patience part of it is probably the most difficult thing when you're just barely getting in last season, or, you know, you're missing it 2 years, you're just barely getting in last season. And then this year, you know, the expectations from some, you know, weren't that high, and I think that they're further along than they expected to be. They expect to compete, yes, but, you know, they're one of the top teams now in the league. And that part of it, that you know, okay, let's implement some of these younger guys. Let's make sure that the older guys, the veteran players, are on board with welcoming these players in. And that culture in the locker room has really gone a long way to where this team is right now. And it doesn't start in the room. It kind of starts somewhere else, and then it builds up, and then it culminates in the room. And then you see it out on the ice. And you're seeing the guys in the way that they play for one another, and that's a big, big part of it right now. The character, the culture, and, you know, the willingness to kind of do what it takes in order to get to this spot. It's come together nicely for them, whether it, you know, still have to do the job in the playoffs. You know, there's all these good feelings being built up in the regular season. They can easily be doused in the first round, right? But it's there. It's there, and they feel it. And guys, you know, having a terrific season with some of these core guys and the way what they've been able to do this season has been great.
All right, let's go to Ryan. Ryan, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, guys, appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
Just want to say it's an exciting time to be a Bruins fan, even all the way down here in Mississippi. My question is about Tuukka Rask. When he played against Tampa Bay, the Nats he played with, y'all may have talked about this already, but he had that little scrap there during the game, the save he made. You know, you take away the goal that slipped through the arm. I mean, is he different this year than he has ever been going into the playoffs? To me, he looks like he's playing with just this totally different personality that I've ever seen him play with.
I appreciate the call, Ryan. Tuukka Rask, you know, as he said, the one of the goals he gave up the other night, certainly not good, but he also made some terrific saves in that game when Tampa really got going offensively. What have you thought of Tuukka Rask here and down the stretch as he gets ready for the playoffs? And, you know, are you at full confidence in his game with the playoffs just about a week and a half away?
I have full confidence in his game. I think he's had a terrific season. Certainly it was a bumpy start maybe for the first month, month and a half for Tuukka Rask. But even he talked about it, that having an opportunity to be rested and ready to go for the grind of the National Hockey League season and then looking ahead to the bigger picture and trying to win a Stanley Cup, he's been put in the best position possible. I think he's responded. If you want to go back, I think his play on the road trip for the Bruins going through the Central Division went a little bit unheralded. He made some huge stops in those games. Huge when his team needed him. And against some high-end, high-grade quality chances against quality opponents that were desperate in need of points. I think that his play has gone a little bit under the radar. I think he's ready to go. Yes, he allowed the goal by Victor Hedman the other day. But what did he do after that? He made every single stop after that point, and he won you the game.
Yeah, what did he do before that as well? You know, some of the big saves he made there in the second period too. But it's with Rask, he's in a perfect position right now based on what they've identified as the number of games that he needs to play in order to be ready to go once the puck is dropped in the playoffs. And Anton Khudobin made that happen for him because he was able to come in and play well. They haven't had to reach down to Providence. He's done the job. That's in last year that was not the case. And with Rask now, you know, again, he has shown emotion in the past. People that say he shows no emotion, well, you know, he was over the top a few times, you know, down in Providence. He had a couple of meltdowns down there.
And, milk crates.
You know, he's had a couple in practice as well, and that's okay. You know, yeah. Fired up goaltender, you don't mind seeing that once in a while. I will say this, though, you know, him throwing a couple of punches in his crease the other day, and that was the second time he kind of got bumped there, and that was Conacher. What do you think Tampa's going to say the next time they play against him? What do you think Tampa's going to say if they're playing him in the playoffs? Go in the crease. See if you can get in his kitchen. See if you can get there. You know, see if you can, you know, get him to kind of lose his cool in that area. And that they're going to go there. I mean, I would. I'd be telling my team that. And I'm sure that that's, you know, part of it as well. And I'm curious to see if he plays. Well, I don't know if he's going to play in Tampa or not. But, you know, if that happens in Tampa in the next game or if they do play in the playoffs, if that's part of what the Lightning try to do.
That's certainly the case with a goalie you might see today for the Florida Panthers with Roberto Luongo. Bump him. Go through the crease. Chirp him. Take a couple of whacks at his pads because it will get him off his game. And that has certainly happened for Luongo in the past in the playoffs. It'll be interesting to see who the Panthers go with here today. My guess is it'll be Luongo. Although James Reimer has played pretty well down the stretch, and he was terrific.
Shut out the Bruins last time.
He was terrific against the Bruins in a huge 40-save-plus performance down in Florida in the first meeting.
Yeah, you mentioned that number, Bob, that the Bruins had kind of targeted for Tuukka Rask. He's probably even
right
a little. Is he right on? He might even be a little below it.
I haven't looked at how many games he's played.
He's got 49 starts. So, you know, you figure he probably starts, what, four games between now and the end of the season, maybe? So, you know, 52, 53 starts.
Yeah,
this
yeah,
season
he's
going to
be a little bit below where they, because they were right around, what, 55 to 60, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, I mean, they are a little bit below it. And now with the position they're in, you know, they can afford to do that and to have confidence in Khudobin to come in and do the job when he's been called on.
When you're 15-6-6 with your backup, you know, that gives you a very nice luxury. Billy Jaffe will join us coming up on the other side. Sports Hub headlines right now as the hockey show continues.
The Bruins, the NHL. This is the show that's all hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirai, and Bob Beers. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
98.5, the Sports Hub, and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston here in the Town Fair Tire Studios over at the Garden. Judd Sirai, Bob Beers. And Billy Jaffe joins us now, part of the Nesson broadcasts, of course, of Bruins hockey and a whole bunch of other places that you can potentially see him, including last weekend's NCAA games out in Worcester. You got some pretty good games there last weekend,
yeah,
right, Billy?
Yeah, we did. Yes, we did. We had a lot of intense, fun college hockey. Michigan found a way. I didn't think they would, but the Maize and Blue won it. Beat Northeastern, and that sent a couple of players, three to the NHL. Adam Gaudette, Dylan Sakura, Nolan Stevens, and then some other guys on their way to other pro contracts. BU was really good, and then Michigan beat them in the final. It was I was surprised. I thought BU was gonna win it.
You and Judd throw a little extra celebration this week with the Wolverines making it to the Frozen Four?
Yes, we brought out Maize and Blue plaid pants. We walked around, yes.
Could have two Michigan teams in two respective finals for two different sports.
Yeah,
right?
How about that?
Yeah, Frozen first Four, Final Four double, right?
That's... Yeah, something like first time since Michigan State did it in 90-something, 93 or 92. I don't know. Look, the basketball team you expect, it's evidently, I haven't watched a game of theirs. They were supposed to be good. The hockey team, there was a rebuild year. New head coach taking over for Red Barons and a guy by the name of Mel Pearson, and they're back in it. Good for them. Hey, and I told you about this last week. They got a Boston Bruin draft pick on the team. His name is Jack Becker. He's big. He's strong. He's young. Bruins drafted him in the 6th or 7th round a year ago out of Minnesota. He was going to go to Michigan Tech to play for Mel Pearson, but now he transferred over to Michigan. He decommitted, went to Michigan. He's like a they look at him as a potential Zach Hyman-like type player, four-year player. He's 6'3", 198 pounds already. They think he'll top out at 210, 215, and he's captain material. So, hey, I'll take that if he plays 4 years and the Bruins have another guy like that in their roster.
Well, switching to the NHL, because I asked these guys a little bit earlier in the show, but you know we tend to focus with you on some of the other teams around the league. You know, the possible playoff opponents in the first round. I mean, we're a little bit more than a week away from knowing certainly who the Bruins are going to play in the first round. And the most likely opponents right now are Toronto, who it looked for much of the season like that's what was lining up. But now the potential is there that the Bruins could finish first in the East and end up playing the wild card, which the second wild card right now would be New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Should Bruins fans have a preference there among those potential matchups, whether it's New Jersey or even Florida, who maybe still have a chance to get in there if they have a good week?
I don't think so.
Is there a preference?
I don't think so. I don't preference. I think that I think we all would agree that Toronto would be the gold standard matchup, so to speak. It would raise a lot of antennas. It would also it would be fun for the NHL. It'd be fun for the fans. It would remind people of just a couple of years ago when the Bruins were down in a certain Game 7 and won. Or Toronto fans, at least. The New Jersey team, I understand they're fast, they're quick, and I get it. They have goaltending. Would you call it a controversy there or questions? Keith Kincaid has taken over for Corey Schneider, and to me, no disrespect, that doesn't scare me that much. Their quickness does. They attack this Florida team. I like them. I think that they're built for the future. If they were to get in this year, it would be by the skin of their teeth. If I'm the number one seed and I'm the Boston Bruins, nothing says I'm scared. I respect them all. Nothing RJ says I'm scared.
I don't think they'd be scared either, but, there's a clear difference there, isn't there? I mean, you know, Toronto, as you said, is kind of the gold standard matchup. I mean, I think, you know.
Toronto's better in the sense that their forwards have higher end, although it's hard to, I mean, they have more depth, they have more higher end forwards in Toronto than they do per se in New Jersey, although Taylor Hall could easily be the MVP of this league. Florida, I mean, how do you not love Barkov and Huberdeau and Trocheck? But yeah, from top to bottom, 1 through 12, I would say Toronto does right now. Toronto's defense is okay, and I think that's an area the Bruins over a series could handle. But Toronto has they have an energy to them, Ryan. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what you feel, and that they're a team that, because of their offensive abilities, and I think that the fact that we haven't seen them, they've done well against the Bruins this year, and we haven't seen them full. We had the one game against Matthews and when he's in the lineup, but that was it. I mean, maybe there's a bit of an unknown there. And the fact that, you know, here's the other thing. They're 100, and how many points they have today?
101.
I mean, you know, that's a lot more than Florida or New Jersey.
Bruce Cassidy talked a little bit this week about the division and Tampa, Toronto, Boston. You've got three teams. He says, you know, this feels like we're going to be really battling, you know, these three teams for the rest of, you know, for at least the next few years. It feels like this is going to be a battle. I mean, do you see this shaping up that way? I mean, these teams all feel like they're loaded to go for a while, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And add Florida to the mix, too. If they don't pull another ownership fiasco move and get rid of their current GM and seems like their current coach, Bobby Bugner, who, like they did with Gerard Gallant unceremoniously early part of last year, they seem to have gotten this team back on track. They've got some really nice elements to it. I do wonder, fellas, about Florida's long-term goaltending. What's going to happen with Luongo? Can Reimer continue to play at this high level? That I am thoroughly impressed by what James Reimer has done this year when Luongo went out. Is Reimer 7-1-1 in his last nine? I'm awful with numbers, so I beg your pardon. But he's been excellent his last month or so when he's come in. And he helped write this Florida Panthers ship when Luongo went out with that long-term injury, that lower body injury. So, but what are they going to do? They're both older. That's one question mark right there. But I think, RJ, you add Florida to the mix of those other three teams that you talked about.
What do you expect out of this game today with Florida here while we're on the topic of the Panthers and we're going to see them twice here in the next week?
They better be desperate. they better be at such a high level. They were, you know, I was talking to some people quickly when I got in downstairs, and they talked about how Florida, last time they played the Bruins, for instance, they were playing at this real high, high, high level. They had that energy, the term that we talked, the antenna up. And then the last couple of games, it kind of got brought back down.
They got into, I mean, when I saw that game, the Bruins were lax early against Florida, and Florida scored a couple of goals. The Bruins had 80-something attempts at net. 40 shots, 80-something attempts. I mean, the Bruins were off, too, like a little bit in terms of their execution. But Florida was, they weren't that good in that game. Other than, you know, they got a couple of goals early, and they weren't great defensively in that game. You know, they just lost. They've lost to Ottawa twice in the last couple of weeks.
Exactly.
You're trying to make the playoffs. You can't lose those games. They lost to Toronto. Okay, no shame there. They had a bad start to that game, and then they came on strong towards the end. But then they went in and lost to Ottawa.
It was
the
next
overtime,
night.
Right?
It was an overtime. Overtime. Yeah. It was a Peugeot.
It was a penalty shot.
Yeah.
But they, you know, those are games you can't afford to lose at this point in the season, and that's with New Jersey losing that same night in overtime.
Right. And so that's where Florida says, again, talking to some people downstairs, are like, well, Florida got one, we got one. They say, you know, somebody said they need at least 1 point today. I said, wait a second. If Florida's looking at getting just 1 point, they need two in this game. If they really want to stay in it.
It's a string of games that the Bruins have been involved in with teams trying to get into the playoffs or other, you know, with Winnipeg trying to flex their muscles or Tampa trying to flex, you know, coming in here the other day trying to make up for, you know, a couple of games that they've had, the so-so games against the Bruins. This is, I mean, I expect full intensity here today. I mean, they have to bring it. I'd be shocked if it was anything different.
So the question becomes, throw it out to everybody here. The Bruins have this natural competitiveness to them. Meaning, Bobby, you've seen teams that, you know, they're up for certain games and other games they're down for. Bruin teams in the past, we've seen that. So is it a concern today that after these last two games, which are big-time matchups, that they have a hard time mustering it for this one?
I'll give you an example. Winnipeg played Nashville, and they won in a shootout. They played the Bruins, and they won in a shootout. Both of them were knocked down, drag out, physical type of affairs. They went and played Chicago the next night, and they got blown out.
Yeah.
So there's always a concern. Yeah, I mean, you've had a couple of huge games. You've had a bunch of them, though. I mean, the whole Central Division trip was all against teams trying to get in the playoffs. I mean, Dallas still had a legitimate chance at that time. They're falling out of it now. But St. Louis playing well at that time, and now they're back in the playoff hunt. Minnesota, you know, right there, you know, trying to make sure that they keep their cushion. And then Winnipeg, of course, you know, that game's just trying to say,
plus I also
we're playing against the Bruins. We're going to play hard here.
Yeah. You know, when you're missing as many guys as the Bruins were for a chunk of time where they were missing at one point seven impact players, I think it causes you you internally, or it causes teams to play a certain way. As guys filter back into the lineup, that will certainly help enormously. We certainly expect Jake DeBrus to be able to get the start here today, but that's going to be a challenge for the Bruins against a team that absolutely has to be urgent and desperate today in the Panthers.
None of those other teams, Bob, you mentioned on the Central road trip were ahead of them, per se. You know what I mean? Like, in the standings. I mean,
well, there's only one team.
That's my point.
Teams that are.
Right. But, what I'm saying is, those
Winnipeg
teams,
was right there.
Right. But they carry an image. They have an image to them, I think going on the road is something to it. Us against the world. That's why this game, you have a team that's behind you. I understand it's about playing the game. I understand it's about pride, all that. But, you know, I'm just curious. I've thought a few times this year, recently, they're like, oh, no, this is not going to be good for the Bees.
Prime for a letdown.
And then, you know, they kick them right in the ass. They go out and they do their job. I mean, they've been great. So that's one of the biggest things that I've been impressed with this team, that type of effort.
All right, Billy, let's take a look out west where you basically have four teams for three spots, it seems like, here. Going into the last week, L.A. 94 points, three games to go. Anaheim's 1 point back in a wild card. St. Louis is the second wild card at 92 points. And Colorado tied 92 points but have four games left. St. Louis has one in hand on them. Varlamov goes down last night. Handicap that race for us. Who gets in? Who's the one left without a chair at the end?
Well, I watched as much as I could before I started snoring the L.A.-Anaheim game last night. That was another great one. Those are awesome hockey games. And Anaheim found a way to win it in overtime. Andre Kasha, it was Raquel that scored the goal, but Kasha was excellent, had two assists in that game. John Gibson was performed magnificently. I'm a fan of his, except he can't stay healthy. That's my big concern about his. He's been their MVP. There's no doubt about it. To me, the feel-good story would be Colorado, fellas, finding a way to get in after the year that they had last year and to where they are this year, what Jared Bednar's got them doing. Colorado and Anaheim end up playing, I believe it's tomorrow. I'm trying to pull up the schedules. They play. So Anaheim, their remaining games are Colorado, Minnesota, Dallas, Arizona. I'd like to think that they could win at least two, if not three of those. The L.A. Kings have Colorado as well. They have Colorado, Minnesota, and Dallas, just three.
Well, if my math is right, by the way, I think Colorado has one more home game. They've been terrific at home.
They do. Last game for them.
They're two games under 500 away from Colorado. You mentioned Semyon Varlamov is hurt. That will certainly be a damaging blow for them. The St. Louis Blues, they've got Arizona tonight, which has not been easy.
Not lately.
You know, I think they've kind of toned it down here a little bit, but they've
Ask
been an
Tampa
upset
the
special.
Other day. They beat Tampa 4-1.
They have.
On the road.
They have.
Yeah. So you're right. Colorado goes, how's this trip? Anaheim, L.A., San Jose. Three games in 5 days. On the road, and then they finish at home against St. Louis, which could end up being for right. that last playoff spot if Varlamov is hurt. Now, Bernier earlier this year, Jonathan Bernier, was excellent for them in filling it, like shockingly good for them and starter worthy. Can he do it again? We'll have to wait and see. Again, the feel-good story would be, for me, Colorado. I think Anaheim does get in. And when it's all said and done, I think L.A. Jonathan Quick hasn't wowed me this year. But Jeff Carter's come back, and he's played beautifully. He adds an element to that team, fellas, that they didn't have before. And Anze Kopitar seems like he wants to be in that Hart Trophy consideration talk at the end of the year.
It'll be interesting to see if the Blues can keep it up. They lost Carl Gunnarsson here down the stretch.
I don't like the Blues team nearly. You guys like them?
Yeah. They're not deep enough.
I like their goaltending.
I mean, can they do some damage?
Yeah,
yes.
I don't know, Jake Allen's. I don't know how long is Hutton out for. I mean, he's been out for a while now, but Jake Allen's been running with it, and he's actually played pretty well. But
yep. When it's all said and done, I think that's just, if they make it, it's one of those squeak in. But I almost don't know if Doug Armstrong wants him to make. I mean, maybe now he does after he traded Stastny, which he had to do. He said I had to do. I think he was thinking that they would go the other way a bit and get a better chance at a higher draft. They're in that malaise right now of that middling mediocrity of the NHL.
All right, let's finish on this, Billy, because we talked about it earlier, and you're as plugged into the Department of Player Safety as anybody we've got. So, you know, this continued frustration level from Bruins fans, and now we hear it from Cam Neely this week about the Department of Player Safety and the unevenness of their decisions. What did you make of their explanation or what we hear about the explanation about Morrissey not getting supplemental discipline this week?
I thought initially it would be something because I thought of the intent that was there, you know, coming in, hovers from the left point, comes to the mid-slot area, then tracks down Grizzlick in the corner. Grizzlick did turn, but, you know, and they clip it with regard to, you know, second by second, millisecond by millisecond, frame by frame. Their feeling is that the skates were on the ice upon point of impact. I thought the message of the hit, maybe Grizz turned and maybe the skates were on the ice, but the message of the hit coming in like that with point, what was it, 1 second left? Whatever, you know what I mean, yeah. Second left. I thought it would have been suspendable I just for the message, but they're trying to – sometimes I think they lose the point of the hit. And they say, what's just the actual type of contact that's made? And that's the one thing I think that they really need to start focusing on a bit more. I mean, what was the point of that hit right there? What was
retaliation.
It's already, we talked about it a little bit earlier. It's exactly right. I mean, the intent of it and the point of it. Could it have been avoided? Yes.
Right. So,
but because of what was going on around and what was going on, you know, just prior to, I mean, and throughout the game, that's why that hit was made.
Right. So the fact that his feet, if you're going to go just, let's just, I mean, there's nothing to argue here, meaning Grizz turned a little bit. Yeah, he did. But he also probably felt the guy coming. Now, Bob, being a former defenseman, you don't want to do that. You want to get yourself out of that. But it's human instinct, I think, there, too.
And a lot more now than it used to be.
Because kids are taught that, which is exactly.
Just saying, that's the way the game is played now. I
mean, right. And then the other thing is,
a lot more.
Take it. I'm using quotation. I don't know why I'm doing it on radio. Take that into consideration. And the feet on the ice, I guess you take that in consideration, but why was that hit even made? Just, you know what, stick to body. Stick to body, meaning stick to puck. Come in there, give him a little bear hug. Get out of there and tell him, hey, next time. I don't know. I'm being flippant here. Tell him next time you'll get him. I didn't think a hit had to be made. The fact that he wasn't hurt, I know he missed the rest of the game, but the Bruins didn't want to say he's got a concussion or anything to the next day because then he's out a week, you know, and Matt doesn't want to be out of the lineup, and he doesn't, thankfully. You know, God knows the last thing you need is get another Bruins player hurt. But, yeah, long-winded answer of saying, I thought something because of the intent. Even a fine. Even so, I don't know. Maybe I'm speaking out of turn, or maybe they couldn't do that. I thought that some statement could have been made there.
All right, we'll let you go on that. Guys, thanks, I appreciate buddy. It always, and we'll talk to you next week in the final weekend of the regular season. Looking forward to it.
Thanks, RJ.
Sounds good.
All right, face-off coming up in just over 2 hours over at the Garden. Judd Surratt, Bob Beers will have the pregame show at 12:30. Stick around. We got is Gasper and Murray, just Murray, probably, coming up next here on the Sports Hub for the next 90 minutes.